Well, good morning. This is Per Fogren, KBOO News and Public Affairs, and our guest is Joe Hatcher, who is a veteran of the war in Iraq, and he will be appearing Saturday, May 20th at 7 p.m. at St. Francis Church. That's at Southeast 12th and Pine, and he will be appearing with Dan Sahor, who is a former soldier in Israel, a refuser who... And they will be speaking Saturday at 7 p.m. at St. Francis Church. Earlier that day, they will be planting flowers with Veterans for Peace at the new Peace Memorial Park, which is at North Interstate and Northeast Oregon. That's kind of a little bit of a park at the east end of the Steel Bridge. And that will be on Saturday from noon until 3. So anyway, Joe, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome to KBOO.
Good to be here.
So what are you going to be talking about Saturday night? You are going to talk about your occupation duty or what?
I'm going to be sharing my experiences, and I'm also going to be attempting to explain the issues that surround what's going on in the war right now. I believe that there's a lack of awareness within the community, not your community per se, but nationwide, where people just are unaware of the facts, and I believe that this is going to give us a good opportunity to bring those to public light.
Well, I guess people throw around this phrase, support our troops, and that can mean almost anything. How would the troops like to be supported? Do they need to be told the truth, or do they find the truth out on their own, I suppose?
Well, supporting the troops is a broad topic.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, bringing the truth to the troops is going to be essential here in the near future. But right now, the support that the troops need is we need to bring them home, first and foremost. That's the best support we can give them right now. They're fighting in an unjust and illegal war, occupying a sovereign nation. And we need to bring them back. That's the most powerful support we can give them. However, I hear lots of people saying, support the troops, support the troops, support the troops, and all they do is buy a yellow bumper sticker and continue their warmongering. The only support I felt when I was deployed was from the protesters, was from the people who fought this occupation. And those people were my lifeline. They were my support. And here I am trying to give that back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the best support we can give other than a plane ticket home.
Were you in much contact with them?
Only through the internet, only through what I saw in the media.
Now, you did start an anti-war blog while you were over there, you and your comrades. What was that like? Did that get much flack from the higher-ups?
That got a great deal of flack from the higher-ups. Two members of the website were actually brought up on court-martial, and we had to take the site down for a couple months. Along with that, we did get a couple threats to our physical selves on the site, but I don't see how they could pursue those in any way. No, running the website was very important in order for us to both vent and explain to the public what the situation was downrange from a soldier's perspective. The fact that we had an anti-war bent on our page brought a lot of aggression towards us from both our chain of command and some of our fellow soldiers, but we felt it essential to let the public know what was going on through our eyes.
Now, these guys who were court-martialed, what were the charges against them?
Oh, they were not actually court-martialed. They tried to court-martial them. They were brought up on charges of sedition.
Oh, boy.
Which is acting or speaking against the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all waived after about a month legal battle, because nothing on the website actually compromised any operational security in any way, and so it was a First Amendment issue, and they couldn't touch us.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to your position of opposing the war?
Beg pardon?
How did you arrive at your position, of opposing the war?
Well, before we even deployed, we were well aware that there was no connection between Saddam and Al-Qaeda. We knew there was no connection between Saddam and weapons of mass destruction. We knew that there was no connection between Saddam and 9/11 whatsoever. We knew that we were invading that country on false pretense. Many, many, many of the soldiers I deployed with did so against their will out of fear of the system and fear of being court-martialed or fear of being removed from military service.
Were you in the
regular more than willing to defend this nation. Soldiers are more than willing to fight to the death at any chance. Mm-hmm. However, all we ask is that we not be sent on someone's whim in order to control the natural resources of a sovereign nation. Mm-hmm. And we are being used and exploited by this government. How many generals have to come out against Donald Rumsfeld, a civilian who is destroying their military? How many people have to say that this occupation needs to end now before the people in power actually pay attention to it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, so many of these people in power who are, trumpeting this war never served a day of their lives in the military.
I'm more than aware of that.
Yeah, I think Rumsfeld's a Navy pilot, but other than that, I mean, the others were, they were civilians all their lives.
Mm-hmm. No, the Navy pilot you were referring to, who was that again?
That was Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld was a pilot.
Yeah, I don't think he ever saw combat, but he was a pilot for a while. But, were you in the regular Army, or were you in the reserves, or what?
I was Army Recon. I was regular Army as a cavalry scout with 1-4 Cavalry out of Schweinfurt, Germany.
Oh, okay. See, I was stationed near Bamberg and Würzburg for a while.
That's correct.
Years ago. You enlisted in the Army then, or?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
I enlisted in the Army in late 2000 and entered the Army on the delayed entry program and reached Fort Knox, Kentucky on the most unfortunate date of September 10th, 2001.
Uh-huh. And then you're out of the Army now, or?
Yes, I've completed my term and was honorably discharged on May 31st of last year.
Uh-huh. Do you still have reserve time after you get out of the regular Army, or is that no longer happening?
That's the inactive ready reserve, correct. They can recall me at any time until my full 8-year contract is over.
I see, yeah. Well, that hasn't changed much then. So what are you doing now? You are in the Iraq Veterans Against the War?
Iraq Veterans Against the War, traveling. I do speaking engagements, counter-recruitment actions. I try to just spread the word as far and wide and fast as I can. I believe that ending this occupation and saving the lives on both sides is should be the most immediate goal of this nation.
Mm-hmm. So what was the worst thing about occupation duty? There must be a lot of bad things about it. But what really sticks out in your mind?
I would say the not the worst thing about being an occupying army, but the hardest thing about being an occupying army is the constant awareness that everyone you see on the street and every single person you hear about in the news who is a native to that nation wants you out of there.
Uh-huh.
If we'd have removed Saddam from power and left that country, when Bush stood on the deck of the Lincoln and said, "This mission is accomplished," and then immediately began withdrawal of our troops, we would not be seeing this situation now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, our government helped put Saddam in power in the first place.
I am well aware of that.
Uh-huh.
We also gave him the chemical weapons he used on the Kurds. That's why we knew that they were there in the first place.
Well, so... You know, there was a poll not too long ago that an overwhelming majority of the troops do want to come home, but they have a kind. I don't know. Are they getting the truth? Are they getting kind of? I don't want to say lied to by their superiors, but are they finding out the hard way what it's like over there, what the war's all about?
Yeah, I read a startling fact yesterday that 80% of active 80% of the military serving in Iraq right now believes that it is retribution for the attacks on 9/11.
Mm-hmm. So they 80%. Believe this.
Now, mind you, there's probably a good majority of them that also believe we went there for weapons of mass destruction, etc. I mean, but there are obviously no parallels between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Mm-hmm. I mean, one's Shia, one's Sunni. They're diametrically opposed anyway. And to say that they had this, you know, hush-hush connection, it's just irrational. And knowing that these soldiers are propagandized to the point where they're no longer even aware of why they're fighting, it's placing them in a mental situation where, well, some have gone to the point where they just blatantly refuse the truth, and some come home just post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, incapable of functioning, knowing that they were used that way.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, when they do find out that they were propagandized, they're going to be extremely bitter about that.
Most definitely.
Uh-huh. And then there was something recently I read that soldiers who are kind of emotionally unfit are being sent back into combat.
Not just emotionally unfit. Uh-huh. Soldiers who are suffering from extreme cases of post-traumatic stress disorder are being redeployed by the American military.
Wow.
Every day. Soldiers are being refused treatment. Soldiers that are diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder are also facing issues of when they're released. They changed their medical paperwork to where it says that they suffer from a personality disorder instead of post-traumatic stress, and they're removing these people from duty and chaptering them out of the Army without benefits with a severe mental disorder that was caused by the military, and they're writing it off as a personality disorder.
Oh, boy.
And then kicking them out for false enlistment.
Really?
Because you're not allowed to come in with a personality disorder. So they come back with PTSD, they diagnose them as having a personality disorder, and then kick them out without benefits instead of giving them proper treatment.
Well, talk about catch-22 situations. That's really something. And this is from the government that wants us to support the troops. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know?
I have plenty of first-hand experience with it.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's what you will be talking about Saturday night. We've been talking with Joe Hatcher, who is a veteran of occupation duty in Iraq, and he will be speaking Saturday night at 7 p.m. at the St. Francis Church, which is up here at Southeast 12th and Pine. And also speaking with him will be Dan Sahur, who is a former soldier in Israel who refused to serve in their occupation duties. So anyway, have you any last final words you'd like to leave us with?
And the war.
Well, okay. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay, we've been talking with Joe Hatcher, who is a veteran of the Iraq War, who'll be speaking Saturday night. And I think we have another guest coming soon, who is, let me see here, Mary Wynne Ashford, Dr. Mary Wynne Ashford, who will be at the Unitarian Church and doing a interactive presentation on war is a preventable disease. And that will be Sunday, May 21st at 3 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in the Salmon Street Sanctuary, which is right there in the corner of Southwest 12th and Salmon. Dr. Ashford, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us about this presentation. War is a preventable disease.
Yes. You know, as doctors, we've been looking for a long time at the idea that war, in fact, is a disease of about five millennia, but it's becoming clearer and clearer that it is preventable.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look at the war in Iraq, and that's what I do in this presentation workshop, I look at it as if it is a disease, and as a doctor, I would do an analysis that we always do on diseases. We start out with epidemiology, which means how many of this case are there in the world right now and how many have just broken out this year. So we look at the last century and say somewhere between 110 and 180 million people died in wartime. And we look at what's happening in Iraq right now and look at the number of civilians and Iraqis and private contractors and military personnel on both sides who have died. Then we say, what are the root causes of this disease. And if I were looking at something like tuberculosis, I would say, okay, it's a bacterium, a mycobacterium. But as a doctor, I always have to say, but why this patient and why right now? And there I would say, oh, well, this patient is homeless and malnourished and living in poverty, exposed to the bacterium, but also this person has HIV, is HIV positive, and so is immune compromised. And then I have to say, well, why aren't they getting the antiretroviral drugs? And I have to look at the social circumstances there. Same thing applies to war. When I look at the war in Iraq, we could say, oh, well, excuse me, the war started because we were worried about weapons of mass destruction and we were worried about Saddam Hussein and 9/11. But those have those reasons have both been completely discounted. So then we have to say, well, what are the root causes of this war? And that's where I find the audience always has many, many answers. And I ask the audience to give their answers of the root causes of this disease, and then we look together at what is the appropriate treatment, how do we prevent this from happening again, and how do we rehabilitate this patient. And the patient from war is not only the Iraqi people and their society, but it's also the Americans and the British and other troops who are over there and their families and their society.
Well, when you talk about war as a preventable disease, do you mean a physical disease, or can it also be a mental disease also?
Good question. It is definitely a mental disease also. And there are sort of predisposing factors in that mental disease that happen even before the war breaks out. And there are things like people becoming fearful and warmongers really promoting that kind of fear in order to justify using a military intervention, instead of talking about how people have to learn today to resolve their conflicts in other ways, because the world is too fragile for us to keep doing this. So it's a mental disease before it begins. Obviously, there is enormous derangement once people are in an actual conflict situation. And then when they come out and they have post-traumatic stress disorder or suicidal depression or alcoholism and drug abuse, those are all the mental sequelae of going to war and being a part of it.
Yeah, you know, our previous guests just talked how these guys are sent back into combat with all these ailments and everything.
Oh, it's a heartbreak.
You know, I think about these people who push the war, you know, these office strategists back in Washington, and most of whom never served in the military in their lives. And I just wonder what kind of psychological makeup do they have? These are guys in suits who, you know, dream of conquest, but as somebody else does the fighting.
It's somebody else's battle, and they are the ones who reap the benefits. I think one of the big causes, and my audiences point this out again and again, is that war is a huge profiteering enterprise, and that many of the people who are pushing for war stand to make billions from the war. And I think that's one of the things that needs to be exposed, because in a way, when the drums are being beaten and we're being told that, gosh, we have, this is the one exception, this is the time that we must save democracy or freedom or whatever it is, we tend to forget that this is being pushed by people who stand to make billions.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you talk about it, it's interesting. You mentioned the word intervention, and I know when you have a dysfunctional family, say when one person in the family is acting out and sort of endangering that himself and others, the family and outside people will do what they call an intervention.
Absolutely.
Remove that person kind of from authority in the family.
That's right.
I wonder if there's any way.
It's so similar, because mm-hmm. we have to do the intervention, but we know that it's not sufficient for us simply to, let's say, to pull our troops out right this minute, mm-hmm. Because we haven't actually resolved the deeper issues. So that if we're going to look at, well, another cause that people raise in the war with Iraq is the need for our countries, all of the Western countries, to have an oil supply. and be certain that that resource is going to be available. But we don't see the United States deciding to go to war against Canada. I mean, we're one of your sources of oil, and yet you're not planning to attack Canada. So clearly there are other ways to guarantee the oil resources. And there's also this major issue of our lifestyle being so oil dependent. Mm-hmm. We need to change that. We need to begin to address that. The other thing is we need to address injustices to other people in our own societies and outside. And that also will contribute to preventing this kind of war breaking out again.
Well, of course, yes, the oil in Canada is not the best quality. It's more like asphalt.
Now, don't go insulting my oil.
Well, we can always use the pave over everything. You know?
That's right. Well, there are so many similarities between the way that we address disease and the way that we need to address war. That's why in Canada, as a physicians group, we're really looking at the issue and saying, if we really examine the root causes, then we know that although it's essential that we get out and have a huge rally, a huge peace walk, in order to tell the government that they're on the wrong track, we also know that that's not going to be enough, because that does not address such things as racism and the need for oil and the greed and the need for someone or other to win an election. And this is not just the Americans. It's in each of the different countries that the leader is stronger when he's promoting war. And we need to address all of these things. That's why it takes so many people working in different ways. But at least when you set it out this way, you have a pretty good idea of where to begin. It's the same thing as if we're looking at tuberculosis. There'll be one group of people who will be looking at getting the drugs that are needed, and another group of people looking at the housing situation and how to protect the other people living with the person who got TB so that the healthy people don't come down with it. And that's more of war prevention, is this idea of building a culture of peace.
Yeah, you know, there are people who talk about intervention. You know, they sort of have the feeling that George Bush is kind of screwing things up for the empire, and so they want to get somebody who will do a better job of keeping the empire going. But that's not addressing the root causes at all.
That's exactly right. That would be the same thing as deciding that with a patient with HIV. AIDS, that you're going to treat the tuberculosis really, really well, and you're not going to pay any attention to the HIV. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just foolishness. And furthermore, we know that sometimes the patient doesn't want the medication. So someone who has become mentally unstable will often refuse to follow the treatment protocols, and we need to figure out different ways to keep them autonomous and yet to treat their disease so they're not a risk to anybody else.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a very interesting book came out a few years ago. I think it's called On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman.
Yes, it's
and he
a brilliant
talks
book.
About how soldiers are conditioned, you know, these kind of like video games to, you know, to kill the enemy. Apparently, our warmongers were really disturbed that in earlier wars, a lot of soldiers would just fire in the air. They didn't want to shoot a human being.
It's very, very frightening. And what he has written more recently is that we are actually conditioning our young people through the video games that are being sold to them. We are conditioning them not to care about killing. And they're practicing exactly as those soldiers practice before they go to war. They are practicing, and some of the video games actually have them track a prostitute, beat her to death with a baseball bat, and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is just about the stupidest thing you could ever imagine doing to children that you're trying to educate into your society.
Yeah, I just read about one of the most recent of these video games deals with Mexicans crossing the border, there was like three types of there's a Mexican nationalist, and there's the guy looking for work, and then is also what they call the breeder. And this is a woman who is pregnant and has two kids with her. And like, in this game, you get extra points for eliminating a breeder, you know, because it's just really, it's just sickening, you know.
Oh.
And I think this video game is put out by American Nazis or something. It's being sold.
Like it's really, really frightening what's happening. You know, when you're talking about women, it's very interesting that I was researching for this book that I've just written about the role of women in preventing war. Excuse me. And it's very, very interesting that they now have done studies of wars since 1960 that have shown that the more women who are elected to your major government, the federal government, the less likely your country is to go to war. And the longer that the women have had the vote, the less likely the country is to go to war. So we don't want to be killing off the women. We are really needing them to balance what's happening in government.
Well, I did my 3 years in the Army. I always found all male societies extremely depressing anyway.
not depressing, I hope not. But I think that we need to use the strengths of both genders and build a society that can resolve conflicts without killing, without violence. It's not necessary.
So is that what you'll be working towards in your presentation on Sunday?
Yes. What I hope will come out of the presentation is that the people in the audience will have looked at the root causes and said to themselves, gosh, you know, I'm the kind of person who could write a play about this and address one of these root causes. Or I'm the kind of person who can teach children a different way to relate and move the society in a different direction instead of this direction of the video game image, a direction of people using their creativity to live together.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I just remember my own childhood. I think all little boys, they go through this kind of a macho period and everything, and hopefully we kind of see through it and grow out of it, but obviously some people haven't, you know, and I think of George Bush in his flight suit there strutting around. It's just...
it's an interesting thing, isn't it, that we connect being masculine with the killing and the warrior kind of image, and yet if we think about that in our own communities, those are people that don't fit in, are the people strutting around with weapons, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The males that we really admire in our own communities are the ones who are out there working with families, you know, caring for people, helping reconstruct housing and that kind
right.
of thing. Those are our heroes, the firemen. And we need to just remember, we need to really examine who we're admiring.
Instead, we get George Bush's psychodrama. Anyway, we've been talking with Dr. Mary Wynne Ashford, who will be Sunday, May 21st at 3 p.m. She will be at the First Unitarian Church in the Salmon Street Sanctuary doing a presentation, an interactive presentation on war as a preventable disease. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Okay, and now stay tuned for Julie Bernard and Art Focus.
And this is the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for Thursday, May 18th. I'd like to say that these KBOO programs have been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Cotton Cloud Futons, a locally owned business featuring futons and mattresses, frames, covers, furnishings, and accessories, which can be made with organic and recycled materials. Cotton Cloud is located at 701 Northeast Broadway in Portland. Information at 503-335-0758 or cottoncloudfutons.com. Please stay tuned for Art Focus with Julie Bernard. Her guests today, Keith Jellum and Stacey Fletcher. They'll discuss the work of noted sculptor Hilda Morris. Stay tuned for that.